You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 13 December. We've got UK GDP data due 9 a.m. expected 1.6% year on year. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. A programming note, this is our last live show for the year, but we have recorded shows for next week. Then we go dark for 2 weeks, back 6 Jan. On the show today, Skolklo, PSG Old Oak. Highlights and lowlights from 2024. It's a year when most assets went higher, some markedly so. So lots of highlights. I imagine there must somewhere be lurking a lowlight. And then we're going to be chatting with Boston Consulting Group, local e-commerce boom, and how are our local online retailers faring against the likes of Shein, Temu, Amazon, who came in earlier this year. And thoughts from me, thanks to 2024. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: municipalities impacted by VBS to get 290 million, 91 million liquidation dividend, and another payment maybe if recovery of assets proceeds well. Business Day: Transnet awards tender to run terminal at Port of Cape Town. FFFS Tanker Terminals will operate the liquid bulk terminal for the next 25 years. Morning markets, just lots of red. US, S&P down 0.5%, NASDAQ down 0.7%. In the East, mostly red. Sydney, the exception, up 0.1%. Tokyo down 1.2%. Hong Kong down 1.6%. Tencent down 0.9%. Commodities, all red. Gold, 2,712. Brent, 73.33. Platinum, 940. Palladium, 986. The Rand, 17.81. Bitcoin, 99,700. Top 40 opening call, 440 points to the red. That's a little over 0.5% down.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Skolklo, PSG Old Oak. Skolk, appreciate the last early morning of the year. As I said, highlights and lowlights. It was, frankly, a very good year, from Eskom to elections to everything going up and upwards, which is really what we want as investors. Not easy, but what was a highlight for you from 2024?
Now, let's start with the market. But good morning, Simon, the last one for the year. Good morning to all the MoneyWeb listeners. Yeah, it's been a crazy year. I mean, we went into this year, and I mean, we were looking. I was sort of a little bit anxious, I would say. You know, going into 2000, we were not only looking at the South African elections, but we had, I think, over 50 elections globally. So it was sort of a year where I went into it and said, well, I'm going to position myself fairly defensively in this market. This is a defensive type of market. And here we're sitting with the pretty much 8 days to go for the year, and market is well over 17% up for the year. This is South African market. So I'll take that. I'll take that as my first high, you know, for the year. But man, it was interesting. I mean, February, I gave out a tweet where I said, well, South Africa, on that stage, found itself as the third world worst country.
I remember that.
That's it, and I think, well, let's take it just after, you know, after the first rate cut, things went well. I think we found ourselves in the third best position, and now still finding ourselves after in a top 10 position year to date, in an environment where emerging markets has been under immense pressure. So I think South Africa and sort of the worries about South Africa has been sort of put to bed to a certain extent. The GNU did work. That's one of the big pluses. I think that's definitely, you can see a few things starting to work. And hell, I mean, I know better than anyone else. I just put, you know, after stop cycling, I put on so many weight. And then you're not gonna get rid of 5 years' weight, you know, in 5 months' time. It'll take time. But you ask, I think drilling through the JSE, I think this year, I think might be the year where we had the comeback kits. And what am I referring to? I'm referring to the focus last year was all these companies that's been delisting or removing themselves or being taken out of the JSE. And now the JSE has got smaller. Yes, we recently heard Barloworld is going to say goodbye now as well. But we sort of need to look at these companies that made disappearances over the last year, let's call it 2 years, because most of these companies had their first reporting on the JSE. OUTsurance, I mean, OUTsurance 68% for this year. I mean, what a fantastic year. Premier Food Group, 110% for 2024. Sure. Yeah, nobody even know about that. we buy cars. I mean, they made their appearance on the JSE this year, 124%. And then also, you know, RCL, the Rainbow Chickens, you know, also made its appearances recently, 73%. So I think that might be my biggest hype. People know I'm a big gold bull. I'm a massive gold bull. I don't think that sort of trend is done yet, and people might say, well, that's asking a lot. Gold price started the year $2,000 per ounce. You just mentioned it, $2,700 per ounce. That's a big year.
Yeah.
I just think the Trump trade, if all the things that he promised to do, I think that's gonna be an interesting one for both the dollar and gold. But then we can't, you know, talk about all the sweets without tackling the sours. Sasol last year, if you asked me 31st of December, do I think Sasol will go up or down? I said it had such a horrible time end of last year. A recovery can only be the thing for Sasol for 2024. And here we're sitting 50% down. 50% down. But I mean, it's been in general, it's been a sort of a bad year for resources. We the hard resources. And it's funny, Simon, when you go and look at the CRB commodity index, just type that. I mean, it's trading at all-time highs, yet some of our harder commodities, and I'm talking about Sasol, let's exclude Sasol. We know iron ore had a bad year in terms of performances. The PGMs, oh man, I mean, that's one also company that I thought that's going to see a recovery in 2024. But Kumba Iron Ore, 38% down. Amplats down 36% for the year. Northern Platinum, over 25%. Sibanye-Stillwater, over 24%. So you could see the trend. It says definitely the wooden spoons this year would be given to some of our commodity counters, and how do I say, even a broken clock is right twice a day. So here we're sitting again in December. I do think that some of these counters are looking much better, definitely attractive, and may 2025 be their year.
Yeah, I take your point. It was everything being good. It was the everything year except for those commodities, and of course gold had a good year, but the commodities didn't. A quick thought on cash and bonds, because heck, man, it's not just that we made money with equities; we made money in cash and bonds.
One of the best years. Be the best years for bonds, and I did a little graph the other day, and I just said, I put the long bond yield on, and then I just went and plot, you know, where did Nenny get happen, where did we knew we're going to be downgraded to junk status, where did the grey listing come through, and you can see now with the anticipation. The things we're already starting to talk about getting off that grey list. Yeah. We recently had two rating agencies not improving our rating yet, but talking about things are looking a lot better. So, I mean, we started this year with long bond rate run about 11%, went below the 9% levels. So that is great. Do I think, you know, all the good news are priced in? Most probably not, but we're not sitting with a sitting duck as we did end of last year. So, and cash, I think cash still is looking not too bad. I mean, people will say, now come on, Scott. If you look at the way this SA Reserve Bank reduced rates, I think they could have gone a lot more aggressive. And I think compared to inflation, currently cash is not looking too unattractive if you look at some of the volatilities we might experience in the beginning of next year with Trump coming in. Let's see. I think 2025 is going to be a fantastic year. I think I'm still carefully optimistic. I'd say carefully bullish.
Yeah, and I take your point. I did not come into this year optimistic or bullish. I left it feeling that, and I agree with you for next year. We'll leave it there. Skull Glow, PSG Old Oak, appreciate the early morning. Give you money, smoother returns with StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Thomas Kumbuch Koch, Boston Consulting Group. Thomas, appreciate the time today. Local online, certainly growing. We're seeing consumer confidence in e-commerce pick up. I think the pandemic helped improved services offerings. What sort of growth have we seen in online sales in the last few years in South Africa?
So from our analysis, we have seen roughly 30% of e-commerce growth across, I would say, a large number of different players, with the top five players taking roughly half of that market. So 5 years of continued growth in roughly 30% now. In total, it only adds up to currently around 5 to 7% of the total retail market. But we're also predicting that, albeit slightly slower growth, maybe around 20%, is what we were looking in the coming foreseeable future, let's say 3 to 5 years or thereabouts.
And 5 to 7%, and not fair perhaps to compare to developed markets like the US, but a long way to go to get to sort of the chunky, what, almost 20% out of the US?
Yeah, but you could say that we have been slightly slower to get out of the blocks. I think now with the pandemic, this has certainly taken off, and we see as a result, also the advent of, say, some global players. As you probably know, Amazon entered the market this year, and we also have some Chinese players who are circling their wagons here. So we have big hopes for, let's call it, the further maturity of the South African, or I should say maybe even the southern region of Africa in terms of e-commerce market.
You mentioned the Chinese players, Shane Timu. Of course, Amazon arrived earlier this year as well with a local store. And my sense is, I mean, shaking up the market, which is perhaps not a bad thing at all for the local market.
No, I think this highly depends on perspective. If you are a consumer, then I think you'll be quite happy. And we also see that in the uptake. Just as an example, last year, Shein was the most downloaded app in South Africa, and this year it has been Temu. So they've certainly gotten a lot of attention. Now, they've also thrown bucketfuls of marketing dollars or rands at the problem, right? So they have made a big splash. Well, the jury's out in terms of will they stay, because SARS is beginning to look closer into some of their practices, and getting stuff here from China and returning it also turns out to be a little bit problematic. But what they're doing, I would say, which is generating a lot of excitement, is what we'd call hyper-personalization and even gamification. So if you go online, they have more than 10,000 affordable fashion styles daily using generative AI and digitalization across the value chain. So they're really doing things where some of the retailers that we've talked to are really, you know, looking at it and wondering, how is that possible? And that will force everybody to up their game. And given how South Africans are quite good at different types of games, I'm sure that some of the incumbents will take that up and see if they can't match or overcome some of these things.
Certainly, they were giant, and you're right. They were all over my interwebs when they were just launching. The Amazon launch earlier this year seemed a little perhaps underwhelming in terms of, yes, they were doing some same-day delivery and no Prime, but that's probably still to come, but also fairly limited products on offer.
Yeah, we must also say that if you compare to some of the other international launches, when they launched in Australia, they had 100 million SKUs or stock keeping units or products, basically. And here we estimate that they had around 15 different categories with 150,000. So it speaks to a couple of things. One is the sheer challenge of the logistics of sitting here on the southern tip of Africa. Amazon in other markets have, of course, benefited from having fulfillment centers relatively close by. That is not the case here. So they're taking a very, very, let's say, slow and steady approach, getting into the market and trying to almost feel their way forward. That said, they are launching their flywheel, which is their approach to entering new markets. So they will slowly get sellers on board, which will increase selection for customers. They have a very tried and tested ability to deliver great customer experience, which will generate further traffic, which will get more sellers on board, and so on and so forth. And once that flywheel starts to roll, they will likely become a formidable competitor to some of the incumbents.
And some of the incumbents, I mean, we've seen some innovation locally. Takealot's got same-day delivery. The big one, of course, is the Checkers 60-60 service, which has also just recently expanded beyond sort of your traditional groceries. Kind of like they're nudging each other along and trying to out-innovate. And again, I mean, consumers, the huge winner here.
Exactly. And we would also say that what we've seen in a number of markets, the local incumbents, if they really spend time thinking about how they differentiate themselves and how they can service their customers better, they can actually beat Amazon. The thing is that we're in a relatively, let's say, immature market. So therefore, we have a lot of players still in the game. In all of the developed markets that we see, from India through China, Japan, US, etc., it ends up being roughly two main generalist marketplaces that win the day. So that race is now on. But like I said, in a couple of markets, Netherlands and Brazil, we've seen the incumbents actually beat Amazon at their own game. But it demands that they really pick up the pace, that they really think about differentiation, and that they really think about what is it that they are bringing to the table that has a local flavor, where the local clients or customers will choose them over this quote-unquote slightly more bland global player that Amazon potentially is.
I take your point on that. And one of the challenges we have locally is we're a large country. A lot of it is rural, is township. Delivery is a challenge, that sort of last mile. Are we seeing traction in pickup services where I can go to a kiosk or use a Pogo or the like to sort of collect rather than have it delivered to my doorstep?
Yes. What Amazon has done in order to overcome some of these is simply partner with some of the local players in this space. Take, for example, the Courier Guy or Pago, respectively, for deliveries and pickups. And we are seeing several of these players speeding up their ability to cover the country. But like you say, it is a challenging place. There are some, let's say, main supply chain challenges of getting stuff in and out of the country in the ports. We have a lot of clients who live outside the regulated address system. So there are some unique South African challenges, but there are also lots of South African players and now some global who want to solve some of these issues. So I think, and we believe that, you know, we will see this growth, and the fact that these globalists have come will hopefully, for all of us and particularly for the consumers, help mature the market and grow the experience for everybody. And maybe even some of the prices will come down, because it's also a very price sensitive market, of course.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought of that. Not price wars so much, but certainly pricing, and that price sensitivity. We'll leave it there. That's Thomas Nkobo-Koch, Boston Consulting Group. Appreciate the time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
So this is our last live show of the year. We're back next week, but it is all recorded. So I thought some thanks were in order to my team. Edu keeps my audio working and makes me sound suave. Nabuchle, who makes sure I always have someone to ask the questions to. And Nicole, who makes my words make sense. To my guests, and I ran the numbers. I do 15 interviews a week, three a day, 50 weeks, 750. Now, of course, we repeat some guests. CEOs come in a few times, market commentators a bunch of times, but 750, it is a massively giant number. And then, of course, listeners. We love what we do, but without you folks out there listening, well, we wouldn't be here to do it, because then we would just be talking into the void. So huge thanks to everyone. And a last thanks to my wife, who gets up with me every morning before sunrise to make me a coffee so I can get my day going. Huge thanks. The show is huge fun. We're loving it. We will be back again live next year. But for now, we're heading out for Christmas holidays. That's it for today. We're chatting with Rob Abram from Orato Capital. We're talking about the US and French supermarket income REIT that is listing on the JSE. It is listing today. It's a secondary listing. It is code SRI. We asked you if it was of interest to you. Over half said you need more details. The rest was split between looking great and don't like the region. Specifically, that region, of course, is UK and France. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30, podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll be back again Tuesday. Nick Kunze, winners and losers.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.